And how you doing?
Radio.
And hello, hello, hello. We're on the K Thompson Live Show, if you don't know. I'm the son, Eric Payne, and you are a lady over there.
I am the mother of Eric Payne, and hello, everyone, and welcome to K Thompson Live.
All right.
You know, we have a lot of hot topics. We have a lot of hot topics, Eric, that we want to get to, you know, right away. As a matter of fact, as you know, we're going to be talking, you know, we deal with news, information, education, including, you know, global issues, which, you know, we always touch on. And, you know, I think tonight we're going to be talking a little bit more about, well, not only education abroad, you know, because Brianna Scott is going to be calling in from Bermuda, and because she is in university in Leeds, England, and we're going to be talking to her about how you go about going to college abroad. It's what are some of the things that you have to be aware of, especially at this time when kids are going back to school and some of them are in school already, and also, you know, the college community. But police community relations in New Jersey and across the country, we're going to be touching on that. We're also going to be talking, touching, Eric, as you know, on the sports figures, the football players, you know, the abuse of women and children. And, you know, that's quite a hot topic, you know, and, you know, that's,
and also
that's
today,
that's really, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we're going to be talking about the House voted to give the president some support here. I'm just, as we look at it, for the ISIS to combat ISIS.
Yeah.
That was just recently one to happen today. House approves measures to train and equip Syrian rebels.
Mm-hmm.
So that's breaking news to try and combat the ISIS terrorists and have the rebels work be trained and equipped so we can have it. So that's something new that's just breaking today. And the crazy stuff about
the international news, right?
The NFL, you know, they need to deal with a lot of these guys that are having problems with their temper.
Yeah.
When they are not on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, I'm eating. Everybody forgive me.
I hear you.
no, that seems to be the problem in the NFL today. And,
mm-hmm.
and I haven't had the latest. I think that someone like Adrian Peterson, who is the running back who's getting in trouble for kind of giving his son an extreme whooping, I don't know. I think that he might not be playing with the Vikings anymore, or they might not let him play in the game that he was scheduled to play in. So all that stuff we'll be talking about, and as our other callers call in and get involved in the discussion, we want you to call in too. If you're listening to us live, the call-in number for you to get take part in this discussion is 323-679-0906. That's 323-679-0906. If you can't listen to us live, or you can always catch us in our archives, go to blogtalkradio.com/KThompsonLive, and you can go straight to our page and listen to all our great shows. And
you know,
so
Eric,
Go ahead.
Sorry. You know, but one thing that I'm a little bit annoyed about and concerned about, you know, here we have these football players, you know, who are apparently guilty of whatever abuse they're, you know, they are charged with. But you mean to tell me that there are no white players who are abusive?
Hold on.
I mean, I don't understand this. Yeah.
We can't say that they're guilty yet because allegedly.
Yeah, but the point is, you know, here they are accused of, okay? And if they did, of course, it has got to be stopped. There's no doubt about it. But the point is, you mean to tell me, as I was just getting ready to say, that there are no abusive white players? We have all black players. What's going on? I mean, aren't they looking at the other players on the, you know, in the NFL?
I don't really think that's the issue, to make it a racial thing. Just so
no, but it's maybe not an issue. It's not an issue, but it's so obvious. It is so obvious.
Well, I don't know whether it's obvious or not.
Of course it's obvious.
I don't know whether it's obvious. I don't necessarily assume that it's obvious that it's a racial thing. I think that it just so happens that these players are black. But I don't know whether it's obvious that they're coming down on just the black players.
Well, it'd be interesting to find out, huh?
Well, like I said, I don't really know that's the thing. The where the racial aspect does come in is that all the women panel that they decided to hire and monitor these issues, ironically, is made up of all white women. So it's kind of I think Joy Reid made the observation yesterday about just these white women are going to be in charge of determining the behaviors of 90% of the black men, or this league that's 90% black men. So that's something that's ironic. And certainly from a cultural standpoint, you know, a lot of Caucasians might not have known what a switch was, particularly those that might be from the north or, you know, whatever. They didn't know what a switch was.
Well, that's to say that it's a branch. I think the thing that's annoying, too, is they're saying that it's a branch. You would think, as soon as I heard the word branch, wait a minute, you know, as soon as I heard the word branch, you know, I thought of a thick kind of thing. You're talking about a switch. You know, not that I'm condoning it or anything. I mean, you know, no child 4 years old or any other age, you know, should be hit, you know, by any man as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, even not women. If you're going to, chastise your child, you do it in a way that, you know, really makes sense. But anyway, without a whipping or without a chastisement that's so awful that, you know, it gets involved with other people. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to talk about, don't want to deal with that, is the fact that, you know, we were going to be talking about not only education, but and Wayne Gilman, you know, former news director of WLIB BLS is going to be calling in also. But police-minority relationships in New Jersey and across the country. You know, they all you hear is, you know, policemen, when you see policemen, you know, stopping blacks on the highway, do you know that they stop more blacks on the highways than any other group of people, blacks and Latinos? And there are figures, you know, to prove this. So, you know, I'm going to be calling, you know, someone from the Institute of Social Justice so we can get some clarification on this, you know, because the minority relations in New Jersey and across the country regarding community relations with police is not good. You know, with the black community and with the Latino community very often also. You know, there is not enough African-American policemen on forces. There is not enough African-American or Latino state troopers in the State Department, in New Jersey State Troopers. And I'm quite sure that when we talk to Reverend Jethro James, you know, since he is, I forget exactly what his title is, but he has a pretty important position with the New Jersey State Police, we're going to find out exactly, you know, what's going on with that.
Okay.
So we will find out the status of police in the community. You know,
okay,
for instance, you know.
Other co-hosting on the discussion, I believe this is Mr. The Legend, Wayne Gilman. I'm trying. Hold on, Wayne.
Yay.
I'm opening your mic. There you go.
Okay. Good evening.
How are
good
you,
evening.
Wayne?
Good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
How's everyone?
Everything is good. We were just waiting for your call.
Yeah, I'm a little late. I actually fell asleep.
How dare you, Wayne?
I guess all right. I don't know. I actually fell asleep and I clean forgot. I got up and I said, "Look at this. It's 8 o'clock."
So you want to get into this discussion at all or what?
Sure. You know, I didn't get a chance to hear everything. I know that you were talking about the police just now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we have our share of problems with the police here in New York.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I'd like to think the new guy, the commissioner in the city, Bratton, is doing a good job. I think because of a lot of the racial incidents that we seem to repeat ourselves, you know, it doesn't matter when it is, you know, I just don't understand. There's something about the culture with the police in just about every corner of the United States.
That's right.
That, you know, there always seems to be like a select few that just seem to understand the importance of interaction with the public in a mindful manner, in that, you know, there's no heavy-handedness, there's a respect, there's mutual respect to a certain extent, and I know not everyone's on the same page with regard to how people should conduct themselves. But I just think it's so important that, you know, certain measures be taken to keep calm, because usually a lot of these situations that many people of color find themselves involved in can be avoided, you know? I mean,
of course they can.
We had a situation, early, I think it was last weekend, with the black actress out in Los Angeles. I forgot her name.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are many ways of looking at that. I could understand why
she was kissing her boyfriend, who happened to be white, in the car.
Yeah.
And they thought that she was a prostitute. That's ridiculous.
And the deal is,
well,
you know, I mean, I hate to say that I'm not saying that I identify with that, but the bottom line is that I've seen instances in which people have been falsely accused, and there are some who've
you
been.
You think?
You know, I mean, it's just unfortunate. But,
right.
You know, the deal is that the LAPD went about that whole process the wrong way, you know?
Well, there were rumors.
Go ahead.
I was going to say there were rumors that they were actually having relations in the car, that was in plain sight for people to see. So, at the very least, it might have been indecent exposure. You know, that's kind of what I read.
Was that rumor or fact?
That's kind of what I read, bits and pieces on the internet. Well, I don't know.
There's a lot of speculation about that, but I mean, no one is really clear. But it just seemed as if they just jumped to a conclusion that this was an act. You know, he was a John, and probably somewhere nearby might have been a pimp. And you know, there have been times when all of us, and maybe I should just speak for myself, where we've engaged in public displays of affection. You know. But, I mean, clearly there's a limit to everything. I don't think she's the kind of person that would have exposed herself, you know, whether it was in the car or outside, you know. I mean, it's just, I don't know, you know. And, again, maybe I'm being biased, but I wasn't there. But, you know, there's this perception about black folk that this department,
that
regardless of where it goes.
That permeates the police department, yes.
Yeah, it doesn't
There's
matter.
There's a different feeling they have against, you know, regarding black people versus white. Okay, let's face it. Your jails are full of black people. Some of them are not guilty. A lot of them cannot even afford to, you know, the bail to get out of jail, so therefore they have to go to, what, debtor's prison or something? You know, and
right.
A lot of these cases, you know, shouldn't be there. We know that. And, you know, you every single time, you know, it goes on and on and on and on. If they had more black and Latino police persons on the forces with a fair-minded, you know, way of thinking and a patient, more patient, that's what they're getting, you know, paid for, you know, is to be fair-minded and not to be black. In fact, they even show this picture of this police person kicking someone in the back as they were trying to get, you know, get him arrested or get him, you know, I don't know whether they were fighting or whatever. How dare they have a policeman kick somebody in the back?
Well, what was that? That's ridiculous.
Where was that, Kay? I didn't see that. Where?
Yeah, that was on television today.
Okay, I didn't
see
that.
Yeah, one of the news reports.
But, you know, it's unfortunate. And then I also take it a step further that, I mean, there are people of color on many units, you know, in New York. And I'm really taken back by the fact that a lot of them embrace that violent culture that they see others that from the larger aspect of society will engage in, just to say, well, hey, you know, I'm empowered because I wear this uniform and I have a right to act this way, you know?
Mm.
I mean, it's just sad. There's so much to be learned, you know, with regard to behavior modification, interacting with the public, and wanting to do the right thing before things escalate to the point where there's no understanding, you know? And I've seen it around.
So I go back to my point that the job of a police officer, a peace officer who's there to protect and serve, needs to be taken a little bit more seriously. They need to be
Absolutely.
Paid a little bit more money, and they should have to go through extensive training and have a little bit more of an education than I'm sure just a
right.
I don't know what's the minimum requirement of education they need, but I know it's not the standard is not that high. And because of the complex situations and human nature and human behavior and many of the things that they deal with, that's a complicated job. And if you want just somebody to do security and be the bouncer, that's fine. But that job is more complicated than that. And also, too, we also have to remember what the original objective of the police force was, I think, was part of their original responsibility was to keep black people in line, slaves in line, I would suppose. So to be surprised that they've been doing the same thing for hundreds of years is not really, it's not surprising to me. And it seemed as though, and maybe we just hear about it more, it seemed as though more violence against black men, black males being shot and killed. I'd like to see a study to see if there was an uptick since they had a black president, and maybe there was some kind
of... Well, there's something that I read about in the Federal Monitor in New Jersey. They said that, I think this is the name of the magazine or something, that it said that police practice in Newark, for instance, the violations of stop and frisk, policy, 75% of stops were unconstitutional. And
then you're talking about it in New York now or Newark?
No, I'm talking about New Jersey.
Okay, I'm not aware that Newark or Jersey had a stop and frisk policy as well, and I don't.
I'm just reading from what I've read. Okay, 75% of stops are unconstitutional, and the feds found years of police stops of blacks, 85% black residents were unconstitutional.
Okay. That wasn't a stop and frisk. To put it in, to be accurate with it, that wasn't the stop and frisk policy. That was a study on police relations in Newark. I know what you're talking about because we talked about that.
Yeah, violations of stop and frisk.
Just so we can be accurate about and get our facts correct. So that wasn't – New York was a stop and frisk. Jersey was clearly found to be, as you said.
Well, we'll check because I have this – I think it was the Federal Monitor in New Jersey.
Right,
so, this is what I read, and this is what I'm reporting, and I don't doubt it at all.
Okay.
Well, the U.S. Attorney General has come out and said that, this whole issue with pulling black people aside, actually the fire started in New Jersey with the state troopers, 30 years ago on the turnpike.
Right.
And the whole stop and frisk concept was something that basically, if memory serves, I could be wrong. I know it came out of the first term that Bratton served back in the early 1980s with Giuliani, going from Dinkins to Giuliani, and then Ray Kelly, the longtime police commissioner, and someone who I thought was actually sensitive to the needs of people of color, because he served in Haiti, served under Clinton, was handpicked by Dinkins after Brown left.
Now who is that?
I can't think of Brown's first name. Ray Kelly.
Now who is that?
Former police,
Ray Kelly?
Ray Kelly, the former police commissioner in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
has been tagged with the stop and frisk policy,
mm-hmm.
and it was something that Bloomberg, approved of.
Yeah.
Because,
mm-hmm.
But it just really got out of hand. And
mm-hmm.
and the thing is, I think what really precipitated that is that, although Bloomberg was really talking out of his head one day when he came out and said more whites were being stopped and frisked than there were minorities, clearly that was not the case.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
it just
mm-hmm.
seems like there was an increase in the number of people, period, being stopped and frisked for no reason at all. And the lawsuits against the New York City Police Department back then, which de Blasio is now beginning to settle, were so outrageous that, they figured, we got to figure out another way to impose a certain amount of decorum without having to just randomly stop somebody because they may look a part. And just be caught up in something where their rights are violated because of speculation and not fact.
Right. One thing I have definite information. you know, or had it years ago when I was on WLIB, and I had produced a segment called Police Report. Do you remember that?
Right, I remember that.
With Dr. Ali Al-Rahman. And, you know, people would call in. I invited people to call in with police problems, with the problems that they have with the police department. The reason why I did this was because of the fact that some of the people in the community, black and Latino people in the community, were having problems with the police department that was so unjust. So I said, call in and talk to, you know, someone who, you know, and Ali Al-Rahman, you know, volunteered for it. So he brought a circle of his police persons there to give people information and to give them help about where to go to. So, you know, and there were so many calls, you know, that I just became enraged at some of the things that were going on, you know, in the community,
you know,
and some of them were so unjust.
Well,
so
Kay,
I feel very strongly about
that. Yeah, during that period, it was at the height of the whole racial turmoil on the Jersey Turnpike, because it seems like, you know, during the Whitman administration.
Christie Whitman.
Yeah.
You know, all that nonsense was going on back then. And it drew light to how that phenomenon was not just something relegated to the state of New Jersey, but it was happening across the country.
That's,
you know,
it was also the reason why the anti-profiling legislation was introduced and passed.
Right, exactly.
I know that as a fact because the person who introduced that legislation is my father, former Assemblyman William Payne.
Right.
So. And that legislation or similar types of legislation was adopted in other states too. But I believe it was the first profiling law in the country.
In the country. Mm-hmm.
And it was obviously ahead of its time. And still now we see how much it resonates and how there's a distinct need for it.
Well, I'm so glad that Eric Holder, I don't know if you're aware of this, but just recently pointed that out, that, I mean, the deal is that, you know, that incident on the turnpike, and he himself had been the victim of the similar profiling situation on the turnpike. The very thing that your mom was talking about just a moment ago, you know, precipitated programming on you know, not just at LIB, but other places where, you know, you'd have the yin and the yang. I mean, you tune into one of our competitors who were embraced in conservative talk, and they would look at it from a completely different perspective.
That's right.
But
That's right.
It was the fodder that basically allowed us to have a clearer understanding of a culture that was just typical of any police department, because there was a lack of sensitivity. A lot of these people were coming in, and they had their own preconceived notions, and it still goes on today, you know.
I'm
not about to despair. I live right in the shadows of a prominent Catholic college, and they turn out a whole bunch of kids who are into the whole justice arena, and they try to find employment as soon as they graduate to go into local police departments. But, you know, when you see a certain demeanor that is typical of a standard that you would see outside of urban America, I think there's a learning curve to be understood when they get into these academies to know how to interact with people. And I just don't see it. You just can't get that out of a book, man. You know, you got to live it and breathe it. And I also believe that there's got to be, as you said, Kay, earlier on, there's got to be a number of people who look like us policing our communities, but with an attitude of sensitivity and not embracing that cavalier culture that the vast majority
culture, right,
would espouse,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Real cavalier.
Yeah, because, you know, it used to make me angry, Eric, when you were going to college. I don't know if you remember, but I told you, you know, as you were driving, because you were going to be driving down there, and down to Hampton, and I said, if a policeman, patrolman stops you, do not say anything back to him. You know, just, you know, let him talk, you know, da-da-da-da-da. Don't get yourself all excited and don't get angry. You know, because, you know, and every single black mother sending her child off to school in some, you know, different state or something had that concern, I'm telling you right now, because we used to talk about it among my friends and, you know, in sororities and whatnot, because we were concerned, because we had heard so much about this. It happens over and over and over again. So there's no doubt about it. And when I talk about it, do I get angry? You bet your behind I do. Because it's still,
yeah.
it just has the anger, you know, behind that because it is so unfair and unjust. And there are people in the police department still doing this.
There was a lady you used to have on all the time. I can't think of her name, but I remember the book, The Little Black Book. I can't think of, you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's little publications like that I know she used to be adamant about handing out, even if she didn't make any money, she would hand it out to young black men because, you know, it was such a dangerous period for us. You know, that's why I get so annoyed when I see many of us walking the street, the young people, with their pants sagged. I don't understand that concept at all.
I don't even worry about that. That's immaterial. But the point is, they're still humans. They can do, you can do what you want with your pants. You want your pants to be low, you're behind, okay, fine. You're going to trip and fall, you know, and hurt yourself one of these days, then you'll learn. But the point is, I'm talking about a serious thing where, you know, these cops will stop them and hurt them. Remember the cop who went into this kid's house and shot him in his bathroom?
Oh, yeah.
Wayne, you and I both know that there are so many things that used to come in at that newsroom at WLIB about unjust police action, but I will never forget that.
Right. You know, it's tragic, you know. I mean, you'd like to think things have changed after all these years. That's why, you know, I raise my hands in angst sometimes because, you know, every story, like the Eric Garner story, Ferguson, you know, we could go back 20 years, 30 years, and I'm certain people before us, you know, who were doing the kind of programming that we used to do. That's what precipitated the whole concept of black radio and having, you know, an advocacy for our people because there was no venue, you know, for them to go to you know, ease the tension in many of our communities across the country.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's what's really missing right now, you know. I mean, I'm not to change the subject, but, you know, basically there's a loss there, you know. I'm not saying the internet and other aspects of media has not, you know, helped out, but it's not on the level of what it once was. Period, you know. And you know, there's a perception out here that you're a person of means if you could, go out and purchase satellite or you know, have an internet with a car, have internet in the car and all that. You know, there are a lot of poor folk out here who can't do that. And then there are people who of a certain demographic, because they're over 50, you know, they're not even getting to hear some of the things that they used to embrace in their primary years, you know, because somehow Madison Avenue has written us off, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
I would like to.
You know.
Go ahead,
I'm sorry,
well,
I don't mean to change the subject, but that.
No, I mean
that's
why that we have to take advantage of these alternative ways to produce and get media out there because those traditional resources have been taken away. Those traditional and it's unfortunate that there aren't more, you know, maybe there will be more as we have more African Americans and people of color that become millionaires, billionaires, or whatever that can put funds behind endeavors like that. But until that time, I mean, it doesn't have to stop. That's the great thing about it.
A money game, Eric. You're right. But it is a money
absolutely.
Game.
Absolutely. But, I mean, we have the few that we have on the major network. I'm thinking of particularly of MSNBC with Joy Reid and Reverend Al on a daily basis.
Right.
But that's true. You know, you don't have the radio on, talk radio, black talk radio for 8 hours a day like used to be with what you guys were doing at WLIB, and that's a valuable thing in terms of ideas getting out there and exchanged and shared, and information certainly being shared, you know. So
exactly.
That's unfortunate, but we have to take advantage of these opportunities that we have and really – you know, I mean, when you could have a broad reach on the internet, if you have access to people, you could really get out there and affect people. The unfortunate thing is the things that the primary things that engage them and catch their attention, most of the young people, are the stupid stuff, the distractions that comes with all of this extra technology. or new technology.
Yeah, but you know the thing is, I blame the media powerhouses for that because you know they set the tone. You know, I mean,
sure.
There are people out here who basically have studied and developed a certain a curriculum, if you will, for lack of a better word, when
mm-hmm.
it comes to putting together programming that is meaningful. And if you're going to bombard your airways with entertainment, you know, and actually look at it as if this is the most important aspect of life, what's going on in the personal lives of entertainers? You know, if that becomes the priority, as opposed to an American journalist being beheaded in the Middle
yeah.
East, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's as simple as that. You know, I mean, we're living in some very dark times right now.
Sure.
And at any time, you know, we could be at war again, but we're too busy trying to figure out what's going on with Kim and Kanye West. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't mean to draw a negative light to Joan Rivers because I find that story fascinating, just having recently lost my dad to what I think is malpractice. But, you know, that still remains the priority as opposed to a beheading,
yeah.
a lynching, Ferguson, that sort of stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, traditionally people, the news is too real. The news is what makes
it
you
is.
Have to deal with reality. So that's why they traditionally people have turned to entertainment for an escape.
Yeah,
so
that's
obviously
true.
It's still an escape. It's still unfortunately it's 24-hour mindlessness, and
yeah.
that gets the most eyeballs, and it's really about selling a product for these guys, right? The networks, I mean, they're just give you a little entertainment in between the commercials. That's really what they do. But they're trying to sell you stuff, and then when they say we got 50 million people, you know, like I worked on shows ER whatever, they got 20 million people watching these shows, man. They tell the people who have goods to sell like anything else. I got 50 million eyeballs
right.
watching my thing. You want to sell mm-hmm. your cars? You want to reach 50 million people? Put a commercial on my thing, and
yeah.
it's going to cost you this amount
yeah.
of money. That's what it's about. That's what it's always about. And the news, more reality, more real or supposedly reality, gets less eyeballs because, you know, it's not always good news, unfortunately. And people
yeah,
always want to
yeah.
be, you know, bombarded with reality to spend their day all day
yeah.
long,
yeah.
you know, trying to survive.
Yeah, I'm just taken back. I about 3 or 4 hours ago, I was on the number 4 train going through the Bronx passing Yankee Stadium, and there was an advertisement on the subway car I was in for Naked Dating. I mean, I didn't even know that they had a television show called Naked Dating.
Right.
And it comes on at a particular time. And, you know, they didn't have any black faces there, but I just said it's just a matter of time before they start. You just become popular in our community. You know?
I can't imagine. Wait a minute. I had a picture,
know?
Wayne, of you copying down that channel.
You know, I have to admit, sometimes I get desperate, but, you know, I don't think I've gotten that far, you know. And it's so funny that over the weekend my cousins were ribbing me about the Kate Thompson Live segments that have been videotaped and placed on YouTube. And I you know, it's like I take it for granted, but I don't go back to watch. You know, I would listen to something, and then all of a sudden, you know, oh boy, you look like Who Did It and Ran, and you know, and all that business. You know, and I don't remember doing anything that would be, you know, if I have much respect for you and your family, Kay,
well,
particularly Eric,
I have
big props, you know, but I clearly did not do anything to offend your granddaughter, did I?
What, oh, Brianna? No, of course.
Yeah.
We're waiting for her now, as a matter of fact, because of
oh,
the fact that
okay.
she's going to be talking
wow.
about education
yeah.
abroad and,
right,
you know,
right.
giving people, you know, some of the college students who may be considering, you know, going abroad to educate, you know, to be educated. Because, you know,
yeah.
it costs so much here in the United States to, you know, have a college education. Good Lord. You know, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000.
Yeah.
I mean, how's anybody
yeah.
supposed to afford that? You know, and then
well,
if you don't have, you know, people who are, you know, really conversed, or I say experienced, you know, in the you know, social media and finding out scholarships and the different things that where you can make money, you know, for your college education, you're really lost. So
yeah, it is. It's true.
And there's so many, you know, there's so many papers to fill out, and there's so much, you know, you have to get this approved and that approved. So I think she might be going through this, but she has a lot of information about it because, you know, she has been, you know, she's doing quite well, and she loves the college, and she loves the UK, but she, of course she prefers Bermuda. However, you know, this is time
right,
to go back
right.
to school. So
who wouldn't want to stay in Bermuda? I tell you, you know.
Yeah. So we're kind of waiting for her to call in from Bermuda. So
Right. Well, I just want to set the record straight. My cousin, you know, I want to make it clear that I wasn't hitting on your grand. She's old enough to be my granddaughter, too. So
you're right.
You know?
Don't worry.
Uh-huh.
But anyway.
Yeah, here's my cousin calling me now. I guess she's listening. Go ahead.
I don't know if you guys know that earlier today, it came out that a judge abused his wife, a case of domestic abuse. Mark Fuller, and he is he's a high-ranking judge out of Alabama. I don't know if he's a federal judge or a circuit court judge, but he was arrested. It looks like they showed a mugshot of him for domestically abusing his wife. So,
boy,
he's
in jail.
Right.
This just
what was
I heard
the
a little bit about
that
the yesterday, and as I'm sitting here going through the news clips and things like that, I'm just looking at a couple of the news shows and seeing that they're reporting that he just got arrested today. And so there you go. It's not just the NFL players and everybody that's experiencing that and that is doing that. The perpetrator of those actions are going to start having to account for their actions. And
what is your take on the Adrian Peterson? I mean, again, not to get off the subject, but
I think depending on how bad he gave the spanking, I mean, apparently, from what people are saying, is that it looks like he went overboard in disciplining his child. We got the switch. Yeah, we got, you know, growing up, you know, we got spankings, but it wasn't really, maybe it was overboard. I don't think so. But, I mean, you know, some people, I guess that's other reasonable adults and reasonable people, get a cross-section of reasonable people. And if enough reasonable people say, or the majority of reasonable people say that's, You went overboard. You abused the kid. Then you know he's got to, you know, regardless of how he was raised, you know, maybe, you know. And another football player, Chris Carter, said, you know, some of the things weren't right. You know, that they did back in the day. They did the best they could.
Right.
Maybe they didn't know better. Now, you know that you know, and people they do studies, psychological studies, and on kids, and see that's. That spankings might not necessarily be the best form of disciplining your children. So it's just a matter of but they don't disallow it if a parent chooses to do that. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of what's too far, you know. When
you
is
know
it
what
crossing?
I would like to know? I would like to know why the NFL is involved in people's personal lives. Okay, that's part of their. Is that part of playing football? Why are they involved in their personal lives? I would imagine there's a whole heck of a lot of other people, you know, doing the same thing. But I want to know, is that part of the, regulations for the NFL?
Well, just,
what about other sports?
I understand, Kay, where you're coming from. But, I mean, if Adrian Peterson was working or Ray Rice working for a hedge fund, this would be a non-issue, you know?
No, we wouldn't even know who he is.
The media, you know, the media has taken it to this level.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
You got to remember, he's a professional athlete. They're professional athletes. They're in positions to receive adulation and be admired by people, and people want to emulate.
I'm not condoning or excusing
I'm saying that's why the NFL might say, "Yo, you're acting a little wild, you know, in your personal life. You're breaking laws. You're doing this. We have an image for what we would like our employees to project, because a lot of social responsibility comes along with this job. So you have to live up to these social, you have to be aware of that. You can't just, and it's good to see them taking more responsibility with that, actually, to be quite honest.
I agree.
You know, because, you know, I mean, maybe if they had
maybe if they had taken a little bit more action earlier, maybe someone like Nicole Brown would still be alive, right? Or maybe who knows? You know, I mean, if they were as active as they're just now getting, you never know.
I agree with you, Eric. I mean, the thing is that we're part of a brand.
And
when
that
OJ
had anything to do with
a job like that. Even Kay Thompson Payne, I mean, when she was on the air, you were part of a WLIB brand. So, I mean,
right.
if they caught you wilding in the street, you know, I remember there was one employee whose name, and God rest his soul, is gone now. But, you know, they busted that person because he was acting inappropriately based on what they perceived as you're part of our brand. How dare you be caught up in some act
right,
of foolishness like that? It goes
wow,
on.
Who is that?
What
is
so
not calling any names? I don't want to be in a situation where somebody's family or even a former employer come back and you know, I've been there, done that, I'm gone now. You know, my days of litigation are over.
That's addressing your point, Mom, of you know, why they're in their personal lives, because these guys' personal lives are so public and people want to be like they have to
I understand.
So,
I understand, but also looking at it from the standpoint, you know, now this little 4-year-old, maybe he was going to go to college. The money is cut off all of a sudden, you know. So, you know, give the guy some sort of punishment
making,
or something, but, you know.
I don't think that's
what?
Really an issue. I don't think that's really an issue.
What, that their money is cut off because of their, you know, their,
made
you know
enough,
the punishment
already,
of these players?
He's already made enough money to probably send his kids to school. The issue really is that he has a tendency, because there's another story, there's another claim that he did it to another one of his kids, that he had it with another one.
Yeah.
So
all right,
that's really the issue. Doesn't make the money and all that. He's already made enough money to send his kids to college if he was inclined to do that. That's not the issue.
But
is
it's
you
part
know
of a
he,
pattern.
It's a pattern of behavior that he seems to have.
Mm.
You
know? It's tragic, but I also think the NFL needs to have a microscope shoved up its expletive deleted, because, you know, there are a lot of things that go on in professional sports that should not go on. I'm offended, and I don't play an instrument or sing or anything like that, but where do they get off now asking entertainers to pay to perform in front of millions of people at the Super Bowl, considering how much money they make off the freaking Super Bowl? I mean, what's that about?
Well, I didn't know about that, but I kind of wanted to make one more point on the NFL getting so personal in the NFL, in the lives of the players, that my mom said. And I think that they could do, and maybe they do, maybe that's through the Players League, but I think they could be more proactive in helping these guys, say, get education, you know, helping these guys learn the lessons of life, how to be responsible citizens, as opposed to being reactive to some of their negative behavior. I know that some of the players' union, and I guess more seasoned players might pull the coat of younger players and let them know, like, hey, man, you know, you might want to do this. You might want to, you know, you might want to follow this course of behavior, go to school or learn this or whatever, you know. I mean, just like the NFL is worried about their brand and the players not tarnishing their brand, they should be worried, they should be concerned about the well-being of the players beyond the playing field.
That's
you
right.
You know, because they still are ambassadors, and if, you know, if a bunch of guys are ended up broke and penniless after their NFL career, that's not a good reflection back on the NFL either. So, I mean, they should, I find it ironic that they're not as worried about people, you know, to encourage them to have more positive attributes or engage more, you know.
No, I agree with you on that. I mean, the deal is that there's a lot of cleaning up that needs to be done. It's not just the NFL. It's baseball. It's just about every sport. It just comes with the territory. But
let's look again at Ferguson. Okay, this policeman has what? What's happening with that policeman? Eric Holder.
Know.
You know, the president did send the attorney general into Ferguson to investigate that whole thing. And I haven't heard of this policeman being arrested yet for murdering this young man and leaving his body out there on the street for several hours, what is happening? And now the people in Ferguson are reacting again and are organizing again, and I don't blame them. So what are your reactions to
this? I know that he had gone through some sort of disciplinary action, but, you know,
no, they're trying to draw
up
the process.
Obviously, I don't
file and see if who knows what the grand jury decided, if they decided to indict him and bring him to trial. But they're probably trying to just draw the process out. I heard yesterday, I guess, on the news that he was still on paid administrative leave or whatever kind of leave, but he's whatever leave he's on.
He needs to be fired and he needs to go to jail, period. He murdered this kid.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But they got to go through the process, and that's where, you know, they have the upper hand, so to speak, because they know all the ins and outs and the process. That's when they start really applying the going by the book. You know, a lot of times when these agencies are not a, I don't want to indict a whole agency, but some of these, you know, towns that might have racist cops, or to me, it seems like that's there's a whole systematic thing going on there, because they really seem to be actively engaging in trying to prolong the process and not be forthcoming with information. So, you know, but it's systematic. Obviously, this is one of the most blatant examples I've seen in my adult life of a town seeming like it's like Selma, Alabama or somewhere like that, where the attitude of the authorities is like, this is natural. We're supposed to treat them like, you know, I mean, that's kind of the attitude of the authorities of Ferguson that I noticed. They kind of have a cavalier attitude about that. They always had a cavalier attitude about the whole situation, the fact that this kid got shot, this black kid got shot. They're just real cavalier about it. And if they seemed like they thought it was going to go away. And even with the riots, they were ready to just mow everybody down if there wasn't somebody to press out there. That's why they had that big
riot. There's another interesting aspect of this that is so dramatic. The militarization of the police departments in across the country with, you know, what, AKA, what are they, AK-47s or whatever the machinery is, the machine guns are very, you know, I mean, all these war, you know, weapons being sold to the police department. What is that all about? Who are they going to kill? Who are they going to, you know, how many times can you shoot anybody?
I don't know. It seems like we're living in a third world country.
Should the police departments be so militarized?
Yeah. I see that in the Caribbean a great deal. And I think there's, and I have to say, honest to God, I mean, I'm afraid when I see members of the police force, like even particularly in my, you know, my country, Trinidad, you know, during Carnival or any other occasion when I just go walk in the streets and, you know, you see them with these submachine guns, you know, you don't see that in the States, and it make you, you know, think twice about doing something. Maybe that's the subtle message that they're trying to say, but I'm also aware that sometimes a lot of hotheads could be a part of this military force or perceived paramilitary force, and just randomly use their guns for no reason at all because they may be angry about something else that occurred. So,
right.
I mean, it's a dangerous precedent when you put so much firepower in the hands of people because, you know, at least with a gun, maybe it could be just one-on-one, but with a submachine gun, you could wipe out a whole village in a matter of seconds, you know. It's scary,
That's true.
But I haven't seen it up front close here, but to be particularly in the Caribbean and Central America and South America, you know, I mean, that seems to just, I don't know, it's certain.
But you
certain
saw that we saw that
back.
In Ferguson. We saw that in Ferguson. You know,
well,
when those people,
you know,
when those policemen were lined up with those guns and those high-powered rifles and so forth, that was
an
military.
Issue. Well, you're right. I heard and read that it was an issue, but I've never witnessed
it. It was on television.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, I personally have only witnessed it outside the country. I understand there was some discussion about that being involved in the state of New Jersey, and I think the city police commissioner had to respond to a question about the militarization of the local police force. But I don't know. Maybe we're blessed not to be in a region where that is actually taking place. But I think there was some issue with Camden, New Jersey. I vaguely remember that, and and the issuance of those weapons, you know, just to protect, you know, the forces in blue. But
Camden did have problems.
Scary precedent.
You know,
scary.
Yeah, I worked for the Department of Education doing several things with them in Camden. Yes, and they did have some serious problems. So
yeah,
I still don't condone carrying guns by the police department into communities. I mean, you know, military weapons or something like that. I can understand, you know, some guns or something, maybe. But it just seems to me that when you put a military weapon into somebody's hands, and it's like a machine gun or something, that's a little bit much.
Yeah, it is a machine gun.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, those a lot of that equipment was surplus equipment that the Army had left over to sell. That's why a lot of these places have it. But, you know, some of the communities, they don't even use them. One community is selling it back, one little small town. It's just like guys want to get the toys and the tank or whatever. Also, and secondly, you know, even the military people will tell you those are that equipment is for combat. It's not for, you know, patrolling your own streets on you and using on your own citizens. Those are for combat. That's when you're in a combat zone to go to war. And that's what, you know, you had some military guys actually said that about that equipment. So for these police forces that have it in the country, you know, it seems like that's their mentality, that they're going to war with certain communities.
Exactly what it looked like in Ferguson. Exactly what it looked like.
And I mean, to, you know, when you juxtapose what was going on out there, you know, it seems like they had a questionable group of professional protesters, because even the protests that took place in New York under the direction of the Reverend Al Sharpton and the National Action Network, it was certainly more orderly. There was no activity on the part of thugs trying to stir up trouble.
But
Ferguson was a completely different story. You kind of wonder where those people came from, and half of them didn't even reside in the city of Ferguson.
Right.
You know, so.
That's what they said. Yeah, that's what some people said. But also, you could also see the thugs coming out probably in town, too, to create a little havoc as well.
Yeah.
Kind of the criminal element. And I think that's what that those out-of-towners, I don't know if they were all kind of a criminal element, but some like...
No, I don't think they were. I think they were there for the movement. I think they were there to give to people in
Ferguson. But we're talking about
Ferguson,
the ones who
are
the professional agitators. Some of them...
Oh.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you know, sometimes you need extra, when you're up against the police department with, you know, military weapons, you know, you need, you know, extra people around you.
Yeah, but
okay?
But the community,
you have to run, you need people around you.
The matter on the table that we're discussing is whether you need people that don't live around, that are going to leave eventually and not have to live there, making matters worse, because that's what they were saying.
Yeah.
Some of these professional protesters or people who just want to go to. It's like the anarchists or the people who go to the economic when they have the economic meetings, they'll go and protest and do the same thing.
Certain segment
of those people who are kind of anarchists, they just want chaos in society. You know, they don't really believe in any type of order. And they kind of mix in with the people who have a, you know, particular issue that they want to bring attention to.
And
so,
I tell you, you know, sometimes you kind of wonder about those movements because you see them in such great numbers. I mean, I remember in New York there was this whole protest about Wall Street and what was going on with the economy at the time, and they had an armed camp down there in that. I forgot the park, but the deal is...
And that was a couple years ago, right?
Yeah,
you're talking about a couple years ago? Yeah.
And they're very passionate about it, you know. And then all of a sudden you see, you know, this subversive group in the Middle East, ISIS, ISIL, whatever you want to call it.
Oh, please, good Lord.
You see
all
of a sudden there's a presence of Americans involved in that. And I'm just saying, you know, regardless of where to me, I can't think of any other country on the planet greater than the United States, you know? And I'm not saying there probably are certain places in the world. You know, I just recently found out a friend of mine who paid visits to New Zealand and Australia, places like that. You know that you know there's a certain element there where there's mutual respect. I'm not saying that in certain countries you couldn't get the flavor of a civil society, but you know the U.S. has so much to offer. I just can't imagine why people would be so hell-bent on wanting to destroy what's here. You know, instead of trying to work the system in spite of
and
all
work
the,
together and
frailty.
Work together.
Yeah, and work together. You're right.
Absolutely. So.
Yeah, but you're right.
Anyway.
You can move here and have a decent life and a relatively stable life, and I would venture to say probably a lot more stable than a lot of places in the world. You know, obviously there's other civilized countries that are industrialized and developed. You know, but you know, I mean we're one of the ones that obviously. That you would want to move to, so I guess it makes sense that they want to, you know, have issues with the United States. But I don't think that we exactly have not been messing with people around the world. We're coming up on about 3 minutes left in the show, so we just want to once again let people know that listening to the Kay Thompson Live Show on the Blog Talk Radio Network, blogtalk.com/KayThompsonLive will take you directly to the page. You can listen to the shows live, or you can listen to them archived. So we're just going to wrap up with this last 3 minutes, but go ahead, continue what you were going to say. I think Wayne or Mom probably forgot.
Well, I'll defer to the host.
We want people to join us next week for Kay Thompson Live on blogtalkradio.com, Eric. And that is / is that the way you say it, /? Kay Thompson Live?
Okay.
All right. So please write that down and then tune us in next Wednesday from 8 until 9 o'clock with more exciting information on a global level. We try to cover as many hot topics as we can. And we enjoy talking to you, Wayne Gilman. We enjoy talking to you, Eric Payne. And I'm sorry that we didn't get to Brianna, but Brianna Scott from Bermuda on the education issue, but we will do that another time.
Thank you, Kay. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Wayne.
All right.
Eric.
Yeah, thanks for I'm just trying to take the time because I was just letting you know that we're getting ready to come to an end. I didn't know you were going to wrap it up right then. However, I'll just take my time. We've got 2 minutes left, but we can go out early. And let the people...
Okay,
I'm not aware of what time it is at this point, but... You know, it's always enjoyable to be with you every week and to discuss some of the issues that are, and I just hope people are really getting something out of this because it's so rare to hear this kind of talk anywhere.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We
have some pretty hot things, you know, in the future. We are planning brand new programs that you're going to be shocked with. But I want to say, you know, I hope my brother is getting well.
Oh, yes.
Getting better.
Right,
he is not well. And, you know, we are sending prayers to him. So, you know, anyway,
that's
we will
right.
join you
right.
all again.
Next week, and join us next week, and we hope that people will call in if you want to take part in the discussion. 323-679-0906. This has been the Kay Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network. See you next week, everybody.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night.